Hello, everyone, and thank you to the Fortcast, the official Fort Healthcare podcast. I am your host, Dr. Michael Anderson, ENT doc, and currently serving as the president and CEO of Fort Healthcare. I'm happy to announce my guest today is Dr. Sweeney, one of our pediatricians. And Dr. Sweeney, I've been with the organization now for a couple of decades. It's hard for me to say that, but hey, it's the reality. And how long have you been with Fort Healthcare?
Just over 6 years now.
6 years. Well, that's wonderful. We really appreciate you do such a great job with our patients and our community and all those kids and families out there. So thank you for taking the time to join me today.
Happy to be with you today.
So today on the podcast, we are going to discuss upper respiratory infections, a very common topic, I imagine, in your practice, Dr. Sweeney, especially as fall and winter rolls around.
Definitely. We refer to this time of year in pediatrics as respiratory season.
That definitely makes sense. So in your practice or in the pediatric practice and in our community, what are the most common type of upper respiratory viruses that you see?
So there are a number of them. They all cause very similar symptoms overall. So when we're talking upper respiratory infections, we're thinking of any type of viral infection in your upper airway, which includes the nose, sinuses, throat, and then the upper part of the trachea as well. There are dozens of viruses that we can test for, and all of those viruses have substrains as well. Some of the big ones that you may have heard the names of include RSV, COVID, rhinovirus, parainfluenza viruses, and the list goes on.
So Dr. Sweeney, it sounds like there's numerous different viruses, with common ones being parainfluenza, influenza, RSV, and COVID. Do you think those are, and the rhinovirus, of course. So what are some of the most common symptoms, or what are the most common symptoms you see that drive families, kids to seek medical care in your practice?
The most common symptoms generally are going to be your runny nose, congestion, and cough with or without a fever. So the big thing that drives bringing that to medical attention tends to be how long that's been going on and how severe those symptoms are when they start. And especially if those symptoms seem to be impacting breathing. Most of the time, we can get away with treating these symptoms at home with our over-the-counter cough and cold medicines, with using humidity and steamy showers, for the little ones using nasal saline spray and suctioning. But when people, especially younger kids, are running high fevers for several days, it's really important that we get them seen. Because when we have any of these viral infections, it can be a setup for a bacterial infection to kind of take hold and take advantage of our immune system being busy fighting off virus. So we want to make sure that there's nothing going on with your sinuses in terms of an infection, with ear infections, or potentially even with a pneumonia.
So it sounds like there's a lot of sequelae or consequences of these viruses that can lead to other problems.
There sure can be.
And you touched on the sinuses and the ear infection. Certainly that crosses over into my world. But I want to touch base a little bit on just how significant these viral infections can be, in particular parainfluenza or RSV, how these can lead to emergency room visits and even admissions to the hospital.
Definitely. They sure can. Especially RSV is the big one that you're going to hear of this year. One, because it's the most common sole cause of children needing to be hospitalized every winter. But also because the CDC has approved very recently new RSV vaccines for the elderly and for infants. So you'll probably hear that name RSV in the news a lot. But RSV especially, but parainfluenza virus as well, they can cause even further potential sequelae beyond secondary bacterial infections. So RSV, especially for younger children, infants, and toddlers, can actually impact the very small airways in the lungs and cause difficulties with breathing, so that those patients might have either fast breathing or labored breathing, but possibly even low oxygen levels. And that can be very serious, which will lead those kids to be evaluated in the ER and possibly even lead them to be requiring hospital stays.
Yeah, and I've certainly seen that, especially in the area beneath the voice box, the subglottic area. That area is very prone to swelling with these viruses.
Especially with parainfluenza virus. That is very commonly a major cause of croup, where we get that swelling and then that classic barky cough.
Yeah. Now, thankfully, most kids don't require hospitalization, but when they do, it's quite a serious situation. And I imagine they get admitted mostly for the breathing difficulties.
Correct. That is the main reason kids will get admitted, is if they're having respiratory distress and if they're needing support with their breathing, potentially with supplemental oxygen.
And thankfully, Dr. Sweeney, most kids respond quite quickly and well to inpatient treatment.
Exactly. Yes. We talk about kids in pediatrics being very resilient, which is great. They tend to be very young, healthy, great immune systems, few chronic problems, and tend to respond very quickly.
So I'd like to get back to something you mentioned with the vaccines. So the RSV vaccine, has that been a common vaccine in the medical world, or is that a fairly recent development? And would you recommend parents considering vaccination for that for their children?
Yes, so it is new. We've been hoping in pediatrics for an RSV vaccine for a long time because it does cause so much illness, so many ER visits and hospital stays. It is new this year. There are a couple caveats because it's not available for everybody. It's available for the elderly, 60 and older, and then it's available to protect infants in particular who are at the highest risk of having severe disease. So there's a version of the RSV vaccine that's available to pregnant moms who can get it in their third trimester, which will then protect their unborn and newborn babies for those first few months of life. And then there's an RSV vaccine that is available for infants who are under 8 months going into the RSV season, which typically starts around November.
Gotcha. Well, that's great information. Hopefully our listeners hear that and take your advice. RSV can be quite serious, especially when you see it on the inpatient side in such little kids. One thing I wanted to also touch base, Dr. Sweeney, is potential outpatient treatments. When children get RSV or influenza, what are your main outpatient treatments?
So with those upper respiratory infections, it depends a little bit on the age because the very young are too young for over-the-counter cough suppressants, and under one or too young even for things like honey, which can be very effective for cough. So young infants will recommend running humidifiers, sitting with them in a steamy bathroom, which will help relieve some of that congestion, help that mucus drain better, help them clear it easier. Using a good nasal suction, whether that's a bulb suction, a nose Frida, or even a battery-operated nasal aspirator, to help clear their airways, to help them breathe better. Of course, when kids are having fevers or having any type of aches or pains or increased fussiness where we think they're just not feeling well, Tylenol and ibuprofen are going to be very important and effective. For older kids, we can use our typical over-the-counter Robitussin or Delsym-type cough medicines or Mucinex to help relieve some of that mucus as well.
That's good to know. Getting back to the fever part of it, Dr. Sweeney, if the parent is home with a sick child, is there sort of a threshold of fever of, say, above 103.5 or persistent fever over 48, 72 hours? Is there any sort of criteria or threshold where you would say, hey, your child needs to go to urgent care, or make sure you call your physician or your nurse practitioner or PA and get seen? Is there any sort of threshold out there that you follow?
There's not one that is overarching across the board 100% of the time. This is what you should do. Because it, again, varies based on age. But that is the most common question we get when kids are running fevers, is at what point is it too long or is it too high? So for any newborns up until 2 to 3 months old, any type of fever, they do need to be seen. If their temperature is over 100.4, they're at the highest risk of having a potential invasive bacterial infection. For older infants and kids, it really depends a lot more on how long it's going on with how high it is. For a lot of families, even temperatures of 102 sound scary, and that it's a high fever. For me, I don't worry as much about 102 or 103 temperatures. unless they're ongoing. So for older infants and toddlers, if they're running that fever for 2 to 3 days, they should be checked out, as long as they're still staying hydrated well and their breathing is fine. For older kids, they might be running fevers with certain illnesses, even 3 to 5 days. Some things like influenza, like COVID, can cause fevers for up to a week. It's when we get to that 5-day threshold, though, that we want to make sure that they're seen so we can make sure they don't have signs of potentially something else going on, whether that's a bacterial infection or potentially even a bloodstream infection or something even more rare, such as Kawasaki's disease, which can have some overlapping symptoms with those other coughs and colds. If ever in doubt, I would recommend they call their physician's or provider's office, talk to the triage staff, who are great in helping them know where to go, or call the after-hours on-call provider. And we're more than happy to help direct patients if they need to go to urgent care now or if they can wait and be seen in clinic.
When in doubt, check it out.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good way to wrap it all up. So thank you, Dr. Sweeney, for joining me today. I hope our listeners have enjoyed our conversation. And thanks again for joining me. Do you have any parting comments, Dr. Sweeney?
I hope everyone stays healthy through this year's respiratory season.
All right. Well, thank you. So in conclusion, thank you for joining me on the Fortcast podcast today. And please feel free to share it on your social channels. And I look forward to having you listen to us in the future. Our podcast is available on the Ford Healthcare website. Thank you.